This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
House committee members advance a bill to raise the U.S. debt limit. Plus, credit markets flash warning signs for the broader economy.
The numbers show that we are headed towards a recession. Every single time over the last 30 years that we have had credit markets performing or underperforming the way that they are, we have gone into recession.
And China warns of the risks associated with AI as it invests billions into the technology. It's Wednesday, May 31st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The debt ceiling deal struck between House Republicans and President Biden has cleared a closely watched procedural hurdle, advancing through the House Rules Committee late Tuesday and setting it up for a final House vote as soon as tonight. Oklahoma Republican Tom Cole chairs the Rules Committee.
Today's bill is a product of compromise and reflects the realities of a divided government. We shouldn't allow that to overshadow what this bill accomplishes.
Two Republicans on the committee joined all Democrats on the panel in opposing the debt deal, including Colorado Democrat Joe Neguse.
Why are we here at this hour? Because Republicans have brought us to the brink of a potential default, the first in our country's history.
Many progressives are upset with the deal, criticizing spending cuts for domestic programs, changes in work requirements for food stamps, and provisions that take funding away from the Internal Revenue Service, while some conservatives have said that they will oppose the deal because it doesn't go far enough to limit federal spending. Chinese leader Xi Jinping has urged the country to modernize its national security in the face of a range of challenges, including the risks posed by artificial intelligence. Among other things, Xi called for improved AI security governance, and Journal reporter Karen Howe says those comments underscore the double-edged nature that AI plays in Xi's vision for China.
On one hand, he sees it being a really important way to strengthen and bolster China's influence and innovation capacity. So we saw on Tuesday that there was an announcement from the city of Beijing to invest 300 billion yuan or $42 billion by 2025 to turn the city of Beijing into this globally influential AI innovation hub. But then you also see instances where Xi sort of invokes this idea that AI is also really dangerous and can threaten something like national security or the social stability of the country. And you see that with China just moving very quickly to regulate some of the recent generative AI developments. There are many things about AI that feel very threatening to the party. And so it's quite complicated, the role that he wants AI to play for China.
Xi's comments come a day after a group of industry leaders, including the godfather of AI, Jeff Hinton, warned that AI could pose an existential risk to humanity. And speaking of China, there are further signs of a sluggish economic recovery in the country following its emergence from strict zero COVID controls late last year. According to official data, factory activity in May contracted for a second straight month, while growth in the services sector also pulled back. That comes despite a promising snapback in tourism earlier this month. Coming up, is strain in debt markets a canary in the coal mine foretelling a possible recession? We'll follow the money and see what it tells us after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Where is the U.S. economy headed? For a clue, let's follow the money deep below the buoyant stock market, where debt markets are showing signs of strain that are reminiscent of those last seen around the financial crisis of 2008. Wall Street Journal credit reporter Matt Wirtz has been crunching the numbers, and he just published a great story with the help of our Wall Street Journal graphics team, which I would encourage all of you to pull up on WSJ.com. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
All right, so before we get into the weeds of this story, what compelled you to want to do some digging on debt markets right now? Have you had some sense that things are sort of not looking great beneath the surface?
I can remember the exact moment. We were in a staff meeting and we were talking about the fact that for a while there's been a lot of pundits who have been saying there's a recession coming. And some of my editors said, maybe they're wrong. Look at the stock market, as you said. Look at employment numbers, which are at record highs. To me, it was like I almost put my head in my hands and I just said, well, actually, in my market, in the debt markets, there are real signs of trouble. Signs that I haven't seen in a very long time. And so I can't answer the question as to when the recession is going to come, but it is coming.
And that is trouble, Matt, that has been brought on by what, rate hikes?
That is the fundamental trigger for all of this, right? It's simple economics. When interest rates go up, economic activity goes down. And the reason is that the cost of money. And money is sort of the lubricant. It's like WD-40 for the economy. And it's drying up. By raising interest rates, what the Fed is basically doing is it's not applying that lubricant anymore into the market. And so it's starting to seize up.
All right. So take us into this world that you know so well, Matt, the world of debt markets. What does healthy activity in debt markets look like? And how would you say that the current market situation is starting to look by comparison?
Yeah, so healthy means banks are lending. They're lending prudently. They're not going out the way that they did in the lead up to 2008. But they're out there, you know, meeting with clients, making small business loans, making large business loans to help corporations do mergers and acquisitions. They are lending to real estate investors at an affordable rate. What you see in bond markets is healthy issuance, meaning that companies can go out into the market and borrow at a rate that accurately reflects the risk of the borrower. And it means that consumers, they're getting credit cards approved, they're getting auto loans approved, they're getting home equity lines if they want to repair their bathroom without much difficulty, all of which has become more challenged in the last, I'd say, 6 to 9 months.
All right, so anyone who has got your story up in front of them now is going to see a lot of different charts, a lot of different entry points into talking about areas of concern here. Take us into a few of those, maybe a few that really raised the most concern for you.
Right. And so I think the important thing to keep in mind is that we are seeing trouble in all the major parts of the debt market at the same time. And I have only ever seen that in times of crisis or recession. And so everyone knows that commercial real estate, if you live in a city, you look at a lot of office buildings have empty space right now. So that is a clear area of pain. Banks are starting to take losses. That means they're lending less, which means new real estate activity is going down. And so it's this kind of downward spiral in the real estate market that pushes prices down. Then you have the consumer, which had been very strong coming out of COVID because there was all this government stimulus. Plus, people had saved a lot of money because they weren't spending on normal things because they weren't going out. And so the consumer has run out of a lot of that money. And at the same time, interest rates are going up. And they're starting to go into delinquency. So we're seeing the rate of consumers going into 30-day delinquency on their auto loans and their credit cards spike. And at the same time, in the part of the market that I know best, we are starting to see bankruptcy filings, finally, companies that were limping along because interest rates were so low for so long. And that WD-40, that money that kept them afloat for so long, isn't there anymore because interest rates are higher.
I have to ask, how do these data points compare to the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis?
So this does remind me a lot of 2007 and 2008. Bear Stearns happened more than a year before Lehman, right? You know, we had the late October seizure in credit markets that started in the UK. Then we had the banking crisis that happened in March. So we've had these like mini credit crunches. And that reminds me a lot of 2007 and 2008, where that credit crisis didn't happen all at once. It actually took over a year to really get going. I think it's different in the sense that we've had more than a decade of unprecedented liquidity. The amount of WD-40 that got squirted into the economy is beyond anything that anyone has seen in several generations, right? And so we are going to go into a recession, and I think we're going to continue to have these mini credit crunches, but it might not be this big, huge blow up the way that it was in 2008, 2009, because at that time there just wasn't as much residual liquidity. And so, well, I think the trend is down. It doesn't necessarily have to be as violent as it was in 2008, 2009.
That was Wall Street Journal credit reporter Matt Wirtz in New York. Matt, thank you so much for the time.
You got it. Thank you.
As we just heard, rising interest rates are putting the pinch on everything from corporate loans to household budgets. And they're also making it harder for people to afford their mortgages. And now, housing officials are hoping to fix the problem. The U.S. Federal Housing Administration is today expected to announce a reduction on monthly bills for mortgage borrowers who are behind on their payments. And Wall Street Journal banking reporter Ben Eisen explains how that would work.
What FHA would do is that it would supplement the monthly payment that a borrower makes. So if you are a borrower and your principal and interest payment is $800 a month, FHA might actually pay $200 per month of that, and you would be responsible for $600. And you would do that for up to 5 years. And as a result of that, you would actually be paying less per month than what you were paying before. And you would repay all of this with a second loan that basically attaches to the back of your loan. So after you've finished paying off your mortgage, you would pay back the money that you owe to FHA. And this basically makes it so that you don't have to change the terms of your loan. FHA is just hoping that rolling this option out allows them to kind of help these borrowers as they run into trouble, but not having that be dependent on interest rates falling.
A federal judge has ruled that relatives of people who died in a Boeing 737 MAX crash in 2019 can seek compensation for the victims' pain and suffering before the plane slammed into the ground. Boeing has contested factoring that into damages stemming from the crash in Ethiopia, for which the company has admitted responsibility. The judge's ruling comes ahead of possible trials to determine how much Boeing should pay victims' families. A Boeing spokesman declined to comment. Purdue Pharma's Sackler family owners have regained their legal shield against opioid-related lawsuits. That is after a federal appeals court in New York reinstated a bankruptcy settlement that resolved opioid lawsuits against the family for up to $6 billion. Journal reporter Ben Dummett says it also shields family members from future opioid lawsuits and clears the way to end the OxyContin maker's Chapter 11 bankruptcy case.
The spokeswoman said that the ruling is a victory for Purdue creditors. Those include the states, local governments, and victims who support the reorganization plan. The deal basically includes billions of dollars for victim compensation, opiate crisis abatement, and overdose rescue medicines. The spokeswoman also said they believe it's the fairest way to resolve litigation.
The Justice Department declined to comment on Tuesday's ruling, but has previously argued that Purdue's Chapter 11 plan went too far by giving the Sacklers broader protections than they could have received by filing for bankruptcy themselves. And North Korea's first military satellite has crashed into the Yellow Sea after failing to launch into space, according to Pyongyang's state media. A rocket carrying a military satellite was launched around 6:27 a.m. local time. However, the second stage of the rocket malfunctioned, causing it to crash into waters between China and the Korean Peninsula. The test triggered emergency alerts in South Korea and Japan, with Seoul condemning the satellite launch as a serious provocation. North Korean state media says that Pyongyang will be conducting a new launch in the near future. And finally, if you think your luck has run cold at the casino lately, it hasn't. Because instead, it's the house that's making it harder to win. According to industry executives, researchers, and gamblers, some Las Vegas casinos are doubling down on subtle changes to boost their advantage, a trend that Journal gambling industry reporter Catherine Sayer says can be felt from the roulette wheel to the blackjack table.
So traditionally, it's been known as a 3-2 payout. So if I bet $10 and I hit that blackjack, I take 15. Now they've shifted to what's known as a 6-5 payout. So essentially for that same $10, I would only get $12 to hit that blackjack. Another table game that casinos are making some changes to is roulette. In America, the roulette wheel typically is known as a 00 roulette, but that just means 18 numbers in black, 18 numbers in red, a 0 and a 00 that are typically green. And casinos have kind of squeezed in a third slot on the wheel known as the 000. It's casinos adding another chance to lose on the wheel.
And Catherine, I get it. Casinos are riding high. They took in record gambling revenue last year. But won't gamblers leave if the odds keep shifting against them?
Well, you have to think about the Las Vegas Strip as a destination, you know, pulling people from all over the country, coming to have a good time. And they may be with their friends and walk up to a roulette wheel and notice it's a 000 table and say, well, we're already here. We're going to keep gambling. That's certainly testing out in the financial results that casinos are seeing in Las Vegas right now. People are coming. They're willing to pay higher minimum bets, and casinos are taking advantage of that.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We will be back tonight with a new show. And if you like what you hear, please rate and review us. Additional audio in this episode was from Reuters. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.